Friends, this gospel reading that we have from Luke is atypical in a few ways. The amount of historical detail that Luke includes as he begins to talk about the ministry of John the Baptist is truly surprising. You don't expect the gospel reading to begin with precise details of the historical situation of the time. For example, look at the detail Luke includes. He tells us who the Roman emperor was, Tiberius Caesar. He tells us who the governor of Judea was, Pontius Pilate. Then he tells us who the regional leaders were. They were called the tetrarchs. There were three of them for different regions. There was Herod. Jesus fell under his territory in Galilee. There was Philip, and there was Lysanias. And then Luke goes on to tell us who the chief priests, the high priests, were there at that time. Two of them, Annas and Caiaphas. Those of us who have any understanding of the process through which the Gospels came to be written, we know that the Gospel writers were very intentional about what they wrote. Luke is including these details for some very specific reasons. And that is kind of the approach from which, the perspective from which I want to talk about the rest of the readings and, of course, this homily as well. What do these details teach us? I'm saying at least three things. First of all, Luke tells us about where the Word of God began the work. Luke's intentionality is seen in the person and the place where the Word of God came. So Luke is telling us that the Word of God did not come to the royalty, not to Tiberius Caesar, not to Pontius Pilate. The Word of God did not come to the political and religious leaders of the time. Rather, it came to a simple ascetic man who dressed in animal skin for his clothing and ate just what was around him in the desert. Besides that, Luke also tells us the place where the Word of God came. Not in the temple, not in the palaces, not in the homes of these political and religious leaders. It came in the desert. So John is placing the beginning of the whole mystery of the incarnation very deliberately. He's placing it in a very different context than the political and the religious. What is the significance of this? The gospel actually gives us the answer. Of all the women in the world, the Word took flesh in the humble Mary. Not anywhere else, with a humble woman. It was the simple, righteous man to whom the angel appeared to be the foster father for Jesus. And when Jesus was born, it was the poor, unassuming shepherds who first heard the news of the incarnation. It wasn't Pontius Pilate. It wasn't Herod. The poor shepherds. Folks, what does the Word of God have to do with the Caesars, the Pilates, the Herods, the Philipses, the Lysaniuses, the Annas, and the Caiaphases of the world? What does the Word of God have to do with them? Where arrogance, scandalous opulence, pretensions, greed for power, and self-interest exist, the word of God gets thwarted. The word of God just cannot function freely because there are too many barriers. On the contrary, the word of God needs the simplicity of John, the humility of Mary, the obedience of Joseph, the poverty of the shepherds, and the search for truth that the wise kings from the east exhibited. That's what the word of God needs. The word of God needs people and places where it may function unhindered. And this Advent, that is exactly our task. Am I the person? And where I am, is that the place where the word of God can function without hindrance? And Advent is a time to create in our lives the opportunity for the word of God to function like it did in John or in Mary or in Joseph. Secondly, we come to John's message, which is a repetition from Isaiah. Prepare the way of the Lord. So I want to begin with my first point, the very last thought of my first point. How may the word of God find freedom in us? How is it that my life and where I am becomes the place for the word of God to function without any barriers? John the Baptist's message is the answer. Prepare. It's a very intentional thing, very deliberate thing. Doesn't just happen. It's a verb. Somebody's got to do it. Prepare the way for the Lord. So as I was writing this homily, I'm thinking about my own life. Where does the Lord want me to prepare the way? I examine my life. And I found that my life really is a mixed bag. And I presume that most of you will find the same. There are parts in our lives that are simple, humble, obedient, and open to God's will. I'm sure each one of us. We are a strange combination of holiness and sin. There are parts of us that are holy. And then I look into my life, I find there are parts of me that are arrogant, where there's greed, where there is self-interest and pretension. One of the things that I really am trying to work and struggle with is this whole idea of making judgments about people before I know them. It's really hard, isn't it? You look at somebody and before you know them, you've already decided who he or she might be. Now, each one of us has some area in our lives where that valley needs to be made high, made plain, and where the mountain needs to be flattened. Each one of us has areas in our lives where John's message can be so real. Prepare the way of the Lord. And so each one of us needs to really look at our lives. Where is it that I need to create a highway for our God? These precisely are the areas where we must make straightest paths, fill up the valley, flatten the mountain, where the winding roads need to be made straight and the rough ways made smooth. And if that happens in our lives, then Isaiah's prophecy becomes true in this time and this place and in this person. If the word of God needs to work unhindered in our lives, then we must shed our arrogance, greed, self-interest, and pretensions. Those very things that stop the word of God from coming to Pilate or to Tiberius Caesar or to the Tetrarchs. Thirdly, Another part of John's message: all flesh shall see the salvation of our God. I want to connect this message of Isaiah and John the Baptist to Pope Francis. 2 days from now, the Pope will be inaugurating what we call a Jubilee of Mercy. He announced this sometime at the end of the summer, and he released a document called Misericordiae Vultus, or the Face of Mercy. And many good things the Pope says about it. But he's not just declaring a year of mercy. That's a very different ballgame. A focus for a particular year. No, he is actually calling it a Jubilee of Mercy. And both those words are very significant. The word Jubilee comes from Leviticus 25, 10 to 14. And here is how a Jubilee is calculated. It goes back to the Hebrew tradition, where just like in every week, the seventh day is a Sabbath day. For us Christians, the Sunday is our Sabbath. That day is a day of rest for everybody. Every seventh year was called a Sabbath year. Now you multiply 7 times 7, you get 49. There is a debate about whether it is the 49th year or the 50th year, that's the Jubilee year. But 7 times 7 is 49, and the 50th year is a year of Jubilee. And what is that 50th year? It's a time of celebration. Because it's a time of rest and a new beginning. It's a rest for all the animals, the people, and the land. No cultivation takes place in this 50th year. The animals are given rest. They get to eat what is in the fields, what grows on its own. Slaves were set free. Debts were forgiven. And if a family lost their land because of debt, the family returned to their original land. Can you imagine the relief that was for many people? It gave people a new start. What if you got an email or a mail from your credit card companies and said it's the year of Jubilee and all your debt is gone? Can you imagine that? That is exactly what they did. It may seem ridiculous to it, but that's exactly what they did. Imagine you lose your home because of mortgage issues and the bank wrote to you and said you can go back to your home. What would it sound like for you? Those people did that, giving everybody a new beginning. So when Pope Francis says it's a Jubilee of Mercy, what is he saying? He wants the church to give this world and everybody in the church a new beginning, a new start. It's a time for us to experience the salvation of our God. John the Baptist says, all flesh shall see the salvation of our God. That's exactly what Pope Francis is trying to do. There are so many people who feel disconnected from the church for many reasons. And Pope Francis is saying, let's give them a new start. There are so many people who feel alienated and meaningless in the church. Pope Francis is saying, let's give people a new start. Let it be a time where people experience the salvation of our God. And you and I know in our world how much we need a Jubilee of Mercy. How much violence is there in our country now and in the world? Do you think this world needs a Jubilee of Mercy? As the Pope announces the Jubilee of Mercy for the church, remember the church is not this building, right? The church is you and I, right? Who's going to make this Jubilee of Mercy real? This building won't. You and I have to. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world. What are the chances that every Catholic and every Christian says, I am going to give a fresh start to myself and to those around me? What do you think the world would be like? So on December 8th, the Feast of Immaculate Conception, the Pope will inaugurate the Jubilee of Mercy. I hope We can hear both Isaiah, we can hear Isaiah and John the Baptist and Pope Francis, and truly make this Advent in the coming year a year where all flesh shall see the saving power of our God. The incarnation, Jesus becoming flesh, was a jubilee. He gave a fresh start to everybody. That Jesus right now is here with us in word and in sacrament. Please let us allow his salvation to touch us. People of God said,